carrying what had been the last menu that Mom's place had ever served. Ryan stepped closer, aware of broken splinters of glass crunching under his heels. The light was good, daggering through the open spaces between the roof joists.
All entrees include soup de jure and dinner roll, as well as numerous visits to the salad bar, and choice of desserts, as well as free refills of coffee.
It was an odd feeling, reading a menu from nearly 100 years ago, offering meals that had last been eaten in the quiet days before the Holocaust brought genocide. Some of the details had been erased by the worn finger of time, but Ryan could still make out all of the basic ingredients of Mom's special. Boneless breast of chicken, smothered in chunky peanut butter, with tender young grapefruit slices, baked in bubbling brown sugar, served with choice of potato or rice, with her own creamy blueberry and brandy sauce. Ryan found it hard to imagine just how horrendous it must have been, but the idea of food made him realize that he was beginning to feel a little hungry. They had taken packed meals aboard the boat, ready for the fishing expedition, but that was then. This was now.
I'll have the special with baked potato, but hold the grapefruit, hold the chicken. For God's sake, hold all that fucking sauce.
A mile south, the road disappeared. It had been extended over one of the numerous gaps between the islands on a causeway, but that was long gone, leaving the exposed stumps of the supporting pillars like a scattering of rotten teeth in the gaping mouth of a corpse. It meant an expanse of ocean, with Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico mixing freely in a turbulent tide race. Ryan measured it with his eye, figuring it was no more than 150 yards across, but it didn't look the easiest of swims. He had partly recovered from his long ordeal, but he knew from experience that fatigue could fool you, make you think that you were free of its insidious tendrils so that you took dangerous risks, finding out too late that it was still alive and well and living in all your muscles. The rip of water looked ferocious, particularly where it raged around the concrete supports to the long-lost highway. Ryan could see dark, oily holes and swirling pools that waited to suck down anyone stupid enough to try to swim through. He decided to try to find some way to avoid taking the plunge. After the heat of the early afternoon, the water struck cold as Ryan walked down the sloping expanse of beach. It had taken him over an hour of arduous exploration before he found a length of driftwood that he judged was large enough to help him through the raging sea. It was part of the scarred trunk of an aspen that must have been carried a vast distance down onto the littered shore of the Keys. He stopped to rest for a quarter hour before attempting the hazardous crossing. He hooked one arm over the slippery length of wood, kicking out to propel himself in roughly the right direction. His plan had been to try to work his way out to sea, into the gulf, bypassing the worst of the maelstrom. But the current sucked him into the narrow channel between the two small islands, buffeting him from side to side with white-crested waves breaking over him. If it hadn't been for the support of the chunk of aspen, Ryan could easily have been drowned trying to make the crossing. As quickly as he was pulled into the whirling heart of the tide race, he came shooting out the other side into much calmer water. The only slight risk was that the movement of the sea might pluck him off to the west, carrying him right out into the Gulf of Mexico. But by kicking hard, using his free hand to steer, Ryan was able to work his course toward the southerly key, pushing away the log and hauling himself out over a low concrete piling onto dry sand. If his guess was correct, he should soon be passing the section of the Keys where the redoubt lay hidden. From there, it was only a short distance back to the Institute. The highway had dropped to 2 lanes at that point, but it had also been destroyed by quake action, turned into a jagged strip of unapproachable tarmac and dirt. Ryan picked his way clear, sticking closer to the rugged shoreline, where, 10 minutes later, he found the wrecked boat and the corpses. Ryan's first glimpse of the wreckage was through some dried sagebrush. For a moment, he perceived it as the ruins of some shanty dwelling. Then he saw the clear line of a keel jutting out of the dunes, and his heart sank. He'd been certain that he'd spotted the boat from the Institute flying away southward, safe beyond the devastation of the massive underwater eruption. Now it looked as though he'd been wrong. As Ryan drew closer to the wrecked vessel, he realized that his initial suspicion had been false. This was a bigger boat than the other one, different in many ways. From what remained of it, Ryan could see that it looked like an ocean-going fishing boat, at least 30 feet long. It was very old, clinker-built, from varnished strips of oak. The superstructure had been painted a dark green, and it had once carried two masts, though both were broken off only a foot or so above the decking. There was also a battered brass propeller, though an initial glance didn't reveal whether it had been powered or not. There was a name printed on the side, in florid yellow lettering, ornamented with tiny red flowers. A single word. A name. Leander. There was no clue as to where the vessel had come from. Ryan paused and stared at it. The port side loomed over him. What was interesting was what must have caused the wreck. There were two holes in the wooden hull, both about 5 feet across, showing white splintered oak at the edges. It was obvious that there had been twin explosions, blasting the vessel's flank, probably resulting in its destruction within minutes. The captain had perhaps driven the Leander ashore to try to save lives. As Ryan walked slowly around the smashed boat, he saw that the captain, if that had been his plan, had failed. There were five corpses in all. Three lay side by side, with the ominous look of being the victims of a planned execution. A fourth dangled head down over the starboard side of the wrecked boat. The fifth lay sprawled near some stunted mimosa bushes, as though death had caught him trying to escape. Flies in their hundreds buzzed angrily away as Ryan stepped closer, disturbing their feasting. It was obvious the death had come to that place within the past 2 or 3 days. In high temperatures, the human body deteriorated at an alarming rate. Ryan couldn't tell if the five corpses had been white or Indian or what, because all five of them were now a somber black. In raiding the bodies for meat, the variety of carrion scavengers had torn off most of the clothes, so at least Ryan was able to tell that three of the dead had been male and two of them female. From their sizes, it looked as though one male and one female had been young, perhaps under 10 years of age. The eyes had gone completely, and all of the soft tissue, mouth, nose, tongue, and genitals. It was probably birds that had ripped open the stomachs of four of the five, spilling the intestines in great yellow-gray loops all over the sandy earth. The fifth one looked as if he might have been running away, had fallen face down. His stomach had swollen, giving him a grotesque appearance of posthumous pregnancy. From the crusted and blackened rags that remained, Ryan suspected that they might have been local fishermen, wearing cotton pants and shirts. All were barefoot. Despite the strips of flesh that had been peeled away from the skulls, it wasn't hard to determine the manner of their passing. The three in a row, including the children, all had neat bullet holes in the centers of their foreheads, possibly 9mm rounds. The backs of their heads had been blown away. It had been a deliberate execution. The man who hung from the deck had three bullet holes that Ryan could see, though there might have been more. A tight grouping was in the upper chest, any one of which would have been fatal. The last man, his arms ahead of him like a diver striving to enter deep water, had been hit at least 7 or 8 times. Ryan didn't bother counting. Ryan moved south, leaving the stinking corpses to the blowflies and the night crabs. In another 48 hours, there wouldn't be a lot left to show that five human beings had gone into the long darkness there. But the wrecked boat would stay for many months, probably for years. The boat was a puzzle that Ryan pondered as he walked steadily along the endless beach, parallel to the impassable stretch of bleached highway. Two large holes had been blasted into its sides, below the surface. That was the real enigma wrapped up in the bigger mystery of the killings. The only things that could have done that sort of damage were either grens of some kind, or mines using Plasex, or possibly land-to-sea missiles. However, the latter wasn't really feasible. And if they were mines, how had they been planted? Or had they been carried and somehow placed against the sides of the boat? Suddenly, out of the corner of his eye, Ryan caught a flicker of movement out at sea, the dorsal fin and tail of a dolphin. Then he spotted 2 or 3 of them, their long noses protruding from the water as though they were watching him. They were less than 50 yards away from the beach. One of the creatures dove, and Ryan could see its wake as it raced south at high speed, almost as if it were carrying a message. It wasn't far off evening.